Going to be in Genesis chapter 41 tonight, if you've not already found your place there. And I'm not going to read right immediately here. I just want to get us on track to where we're at, remind you where we were last week, and bring those who weren't able to be with us last week up to speed on this. And so what we looked at last week is we followed Joseph from Canaan to Egypt, where he was sold as a slave. We observed a repeated up and down in Joseph's life. Just whenever things started going really well, everything came crashing back down. And then he'd start digging back out of the pit, everything come crashing right back down. Maybe some of you can relate to that a little bit. You felt like you've had a bit of that in your life. Maybe you've had more downs than you've had ups, I don't know. But anyway, this is what was going on in Joseph's life. And so just whenever things were getting good for him, everything would just fall apart, and he was back to the bottom again. And although his life was very up and down, something important we find out about Joseph is that he wasn't. Joseph was very constant. He was, I think if we could use one word to describe Joseph, well, actually I'll use two. He was consistent and he was faithful. That's who he was. No matter what was falling apart around him, the entire world could be falling apart, but yet it seemed like he was still consistent. He was still trusting God even whenever he was in slavery, whenever he was in prison, whenever he was being lied about. Whenever he was being hated on by his brothers, whatever circumstance he was getting into, he was still faithful. He was still consistent. And now that's not bashing anyone who has up and downs in their lives, but we're seeing this with Joseph and the way it played out in his life. In our Christian life, I believe that we find faithfulness is one of the most important qualities that we can possess, though. Yes. Not necessarily consistency in our walk, but faithfulness. And so many people, I think, put so much emphasis on many things, mm-hmm. on their works, on their activities, on all the things that they do for God. But the most important one that we can do, the most important thing we can be, is being faithful. Right. And I think some of the greatest Christians that's ever lived aren't necessarily the ones who have done great things for God, yeah. but the ones that have been faithful yeah. all the way through. And if you look back in your life, probably the people who have made the most impact on your life are not the ones who did great things, but the ones who were faithful, yeah. consistent. Yeah. If you think about it, that's probably the ones who's made the biggest impact. Mm-hmm. And we see that with Joseph here, that he was consistent. He was faithful. And so what we did last week, we left Joseph in prison. It's not a good place to leave him, is it? But God kind of left him there for a while, too. We've looked at the time frame that Joseph was about 17, 18 years old whenever he was sold into slavery in Potiphar's. Mm-hmm. He would have been probably in Potiphar's house maybe 6 years, maybe eight, somewhere in that neighborhood. Then he would have been in prison for a couple years before he met the butler and the baker that we talked about last week. Excuse me. The butler and baker that we talked about last week. And then we're going to find out today that he was still in there 2 years after that for a total of about 12 to 13 years of this going on in his life. Okay? Back and forth. And so we left Joseph in prison, and he was holding on hope that the butler was going to put in a good word for him. Right. Remember, the butler and the baker both had dreams, and the baker didn't live to tell about it.
Yes.
But the butler was going back to his position. He was going to be serving Pharaoh. He was going to be butler to Pharaoh. In other words, he's bringing his food. He's bringing his drinks. He is there as his right-hand servant. I mean, he's there by his throne all the time. Yeah. So he has the Pharaoh's ear, so to speak.
Right.
And so Joseph has a glimmer of hope. He says, if I can just make this impression on this butler, and this butler goes and pleads my case before Pharaoh, whenever he stands before Pharaoh, yeah. Pharaoh will let me out. And so in the last of chapter 40, he tells this butler, he says, I'm here by false accusation. They've lied about me. I've done nothing wrong. I'm falsely accused. Just ask the prison keeper here. He'll put in a good word for me. Whenever you go back to Pharaoh, tell him about me. Have him bring me out of here. And so he watches the butler restored to his position. He says, there's my way out. This is what God's been doing all along. This is how God's been working it out all along. And now I'm going to get out. But he doesn't. And so we ended there. Chapter 40, verse 23, yet did not the chief butler remember Joseph, but forgot him. forgotten about in jail. That makes you feel special, doesn't it? I mean, that's honestly a very sad verse in verse 23. He forgot him. I can remember just a story that popped in my head here. We were on a church trip one time, and we were staying in a hotel, and Les was teaching school at the time, and there was this little girl in her class that was just her shadow. I mean, she followed her everywhere. And so this little girl and her parents were on the trip with us, okay, and all staying in the same hotel. And so Sunday morning came up. We were going to church on Sunday morning. Everybody's getting ready at the hotel, and everybody's going to church. And after church, we're leaving, and we're going back home. We're not returning to the hotel. So everybody gets ready. They leave the hotel. Excuse me. We arrive at the church, and everybody's looking around for Courtney, the little girl. She's, what, 6 at the time? And so anyway, looking for little Courtney, and no one can find her because we assumed that her parents were taking care of her like, you know, parents were supposed to do. And the parents were assuming that she was with Les because she was always with Les. And so this is what was going on. And so guess what? We forgot Courtney. Yeah. We made it to the church. She had actually happened to be in the restroom. She was in the bathroom whenever we left. And so she comes out of the hotel. She's in the lobby and she's like, where'd everybody go? Because it was our big crowd, our, you know, all of our church group that was there. And she comes out, and it's empty. Yes. Little girl there, just tumbleweeds going across the floor. No. It's empty. Everybody forgot about her. That was not a good day for her and her family. Yeah. Because, of course, the family felt about this big. Because yeah. They forgot their little girl. Yeah. But anyway, we see here that the butler forgot Joseph. Mm-hmm. Didn't think anything about Joseph. And so you can imagine Joseph sitting there in prison, just waking up every day thinking, this is going to be my day. They're going to come. They're going to say, Pharaoh has heard from the butler, and he has granted you pardon, and you get to come out. And then he lays his head down on the pillow that night, and he's still in prison. Yeah. Same thing the next day, and then after a few weeks pass, hope's lost. Yeah. Depending on how optimistic he is, maybe he kept it up for a month or two. But we find out in chapter 41 and verse number 1, and it came to pass at the end of two full years, that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. And we're going to find out here, this dream that Pharaoh has is actually what brings Joseph back to the mind of the butler. Mm-hmm. 2 full years later, that would have been a depressing thing. But we find that Joseph is still faithful. He's still serving. He's still consistent, even though he's been forgotten. Mm-hmm. And honestly, he knows he's been forgotten by the butler, but at this point in time, he probably thinks he's been forgotten by God as well. Yeah. You ever been there? Thinking God just forgot about me. He don't care about me. He doesn't even know my circumstances right now. That's where Joseph was. And so anyway, we're going to continue today to emphasize the importance of trusting God and remaining faithful no matter what circumstances that we're in. And I will say, just on the onset of this, it might be a little bit redundant with what we looked at last week because we looked at the repeated ups and downs that he had, and he was still faithful. He was still consistent no matter what happened. And we're still going to be re-emphasizing that today because it's important for us to learn this, and so it's worth us repeating.
Yeah.
Because sometimes I think there's lessons from the Word of God we need to hear over and 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 you get the point?
Yeah.
Till we finally get it. Because sometimes we have it up here, but it takes a while to get it down here.
It does.
Okay?
No.
And so if it's not for anybody else, I'm repeating this for me tonight, okay? And so today we're going to see where all of his consistency, all of his faithfulness finally pays off. And we're going to find that God had been working all things together all along, even though Joseph didn't see it. I mean, we're, as I said last week, we're looking backward to the story. We can see the end now, right?
Right.
Joseph wasn't seeing any of that. As far as Joseph was concerned, he was going to rot and die in prison.
Yeah.
Right? Whenever he was in Potiphar's house, as far as he was concerned, he was going to do the end of his days in Potiphar's house.
Mm-hmm.
Every step of the way, he thought, this is the end. This is how it goes.
Right.
This is all I have to look forward to in life. There is nothing coming that's going to change this. And then something changes it.
Mm-hmm.
But it's worse. Each time. He's like, this is where I'm going to be. And then it gets worse.
Yeah.
And so anyway, I think what we're going to get to today is honestly where all of us would like to be. We want to be at the end of this thing where everything has fell into place. We see what God's been doing and everything finally comes out rosy.
Mm-hmm.
right?
Yeah.
We want to see that at the end.
Okay.
That's where we'd like to be. But the big takeaway from all this is that we have to see that Joseph wouldn't have been before Pharaoh in our lesson today had he not been mistreated, mm-hmm. had he not been enslaved, had he not been lied about, or had he not been imprisoned. All of those were pieces to the puzzle to get him before Pharaoh.
Mm-hmm.
And I believe I pointed this out last week. Any single one of those, if they were missing, wouldn't have got him before Pharaoh. If at any point during that entire process, Joseph would have just said, hang it, I'm done. Forget it, God, I'm done with you. I've been faithful to you all this time. It's done me no good. Forget you. I'm going to go and I'm going to live sinful. I'm going to live wicked because obviously living righteous isn't paying off. If he would have done that at any point in time, he wouldn't have stood before Pharaoh.
Right?
Right?
Yeah.
He would have been stuck right where he was at.
Mm-hmm.
And so anyway, we find out that God works things out in strange and wonderful ways. And usually it's in ways that we never expect it to go. And I can tell you of several instances in my life that honestly, looking back on it now, I can just say it was only God that could put that together. I look at specific circumstances, and during the time it was painful, it was harsh. It wasn't something I would have chosen. But then at the end of it, it's like, hey, I wouldn't have been to this place if it wasn't for these other circumstances happening.
Yeah.
And for sake of time and everything, I'm not going into any of those this evening, but you all know some of them already. But in Genesis 41, we're going to go ahead and begin reading here and start with verse number 1. I've already read it once, but we'll read it again. It says, and it came to pass at the end of 2 full years that Pharaoh dreamed, and behold, he stood by the river. And behold, there came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine. By the way, just starting out here, whenever you read the word kine there in the Bible, those are cattle, okay? You could translate it to cow, some kind of cow. Water buffalo, whatever. It was some sort of cattle that was there in Egypt. And so there came up out of the river 7 well-favored kine and fat-fleshed, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, 7 other kine came up after them out of the river, ill-favored and lean-fleshed, and stood by the other kine upon the brink of the river. And the ill-favored and lean-fleshed kine did eat up the 7 well-favored and fat kine. So Pharaoh awoke. By the way, this would have been a disturbing dream because could you imagine a cow eating another cow? You see this great big fat cow standing on the riverbank and the skinny one comes up and just, and he's gone. That's messed up. I've had dreams that were about as messed up before, but I don't think they had any meaning to it. Anyway. And so he woke up and he's like, whoa, that was messed up.
Yeah.
What happened there? I'm going to have to lay off pizza before I go to bed. And he slept and dreamed the second time. And behold, 7 ears of corn came up upon one stalk, rank and good. And behold, 7 thin ears and blasted with the east wind sprung up after them. And the 7 thin ears devoured the 7 rank and full ears. And Pharaoh woke, and behold, it was a dream. So now we've got plants that have began to eat each other. We have cannibalistic plants. That's not a good thing. And so Pharaoh dreams, and there are these, there's this one stalk, and it's got 7 ears of corn on it, and they are full ears, very good, healthy ears of corn. And then afterward, there's 7 poor ears, extremely poor ears of corn that comes up after that. And the poor ears eat the good ears, and Pharaoh wakes up, and he's like, this is messed up. Cows don't eat each other. Corn doesn't eat each other. But he has the idea there's something of significance with this dream. He's got to figure out what in the world does this dream mean. And so verse number 8, and it came to pass in the morning that his spirit was troubled, and he sent and called for all the magicians of Egypt and all the wise men thereof, and Pharaoh told them his dream, but there was none that could interpret them unto Pharaoh. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh. Oh, the butler's back. Remember him?
Yeah.
Hopefully he didn't forget about him because he forgot about Joseph. Yeah. Then spake the chief butler unto Pharaoh, saying, I do remember my faults this day. I think it's kind of interesting the way he says that.
Yeah.
I remember my faults this day. I think it was a little bit more than a fault, but anyway. Pharaoh was wroth with his servants and put me in the ward in the captain of the guard's house, both me and the chief baker. And we dreamed a dream in one night, I and he, we dreamed each man according to the interpretation of his dream. And there was, and there was there with us a young man, a Hebrew servant to the captain of the guard. And we told him, and he interpreted to us our dreams. To each man according to his dream he did interpret. And it came to pass, as he interpreted to us, so it was, me he restored unto mine office, and him he hanged. So he says, I remember my faults this day. I was in prison because you were mad at me.
Yeah.
And while I was there, me and the baker was there together, and we both dreamed a dream in the same night. And we were troubled by this dream, and there was a Hebrew man in there that interpreted the dream, and the interpretation that he gave us was right. It was exact. It was correct. And so just maybe, Pharaoh, if you go down to the prison, if this guy's still alive, because, man, it's been a while, and prisons weren't good at those days.
No.
Just maybe you go down there and find this guy. He can interpret the dream for you. Oh, Pharaoh, he's pretty interested in figuring out the meaning of this dream. He's pretty troubled by it. So he decides to send and get Joseph and bring him up to tell about the dream.
Mm-hmm.
And so this chapter, as we look at it today, centers around two dreams and Joseph interpreting these two dreams. And last week we saw two other dreams, which Joseph interpreted. And back in chapter 37, Joseph himself had two dreams, which they knew the interpretation of. And so interestingly enough, this topic has come up in several conversations lately about dreams. Even Sunday we were talking about it, right?
Yeah.
And so I want to take just a few moments and look at whether our dreams carry any significance today. I'm not going to delve in this real deeply, but I at least want to not ignore it. Because someone could accuse me and say, well, you just kind of skipped over the whole dream thing. What's going on there? So I at least want to touch on this briefly here. And while there are several instances in Scripture where dreams are significant, I don't believe we should pay a whole lot of attention to dreams.
Right.
Okay. If you're like me, most nights you probably have a dream. Some of you may not dream very often. Some of it might be rarely. Some of you might say, oh, I never dream. Well, you're the odd one. Because most people dream pretty frequently. And guess what? Most of them mean nothing. Okay? And so in Scripture, there were obviously many dreams which people paid no attention to. You notice here that Pharaoh, the butler, the baker, all of them would have dreamed quite frequently. But we only have six instances altogether. Joseph, the butler, the baker, and Pharaoh. Those are the only dreams that there's any emphasis on whatsoever, any interpretation on whatsoever. Just those six. What about the dreams that he had the night before, or the night before that, or the week before that, or the month before that, the year before that? No one has any interest in those, do they?
No.
So we're finding that there was only specific dreams
right. That
carried any significance to them. And so as we look at these, those ones, obviously that they dreamed on normal nights and in normal circumstances had no interpretation whatsoever,
Yeah. Just
like most likely all of ours.
Right.
But it's very tempting today to get hung up on dreams or on angels. That's a big thing, right?
Yeah.
Everybody wants to study on angels, demons, signs and tongues and miracles and fantastic occurrences in Scripture. Because they're there, right?
Yeah.
They're in there and people get fixated on it.
Right.
Get a little bit obsessed with it and try to dig into these things.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that many have an unhealthy fascination with those. And I believe there's also a lack of understanding of them. These things were the exception and not the rule, okay?
Yeah.
A lot of people look at it as if this was happening all the time, over and over, 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 over. There's like these prophets that were just down here and their whole job was going and interpreting people's dreams. Come into church tonight and say, okay, Peter, what did you dream last night? I want to tell you about your dreams. No, it wasn't going on, was it?
Mm-hmm.
And so they were the exception and not the rule.
Yeah.
They were for extraordinary circumstances. And I believe they were also for a limited time. Can God still give dreams or work miracles? Yes, of course he can.
Yeah.
He can do anything that he wants to. Now, is he going to make a habit out of doing it? I don't believe so. And so, my point in all this is that these are going to be a rare occasion.
Mm-hmm.
Now, I've heard of instances, and I'll give one of them, and I can't validate it, but it's a good story. But there was a story that I heard about a group that, I forget, I think they were like in the Amazon region. And they were cannibals. They were a tribal group. They were isolated from everybody else. I know isolation is a dirty word now. But anyway, they were isolated from everybody else. And they were cannibalistic. Anyone who had ever tried to reach them or have any contact with them, it didn't go well for them.
Right.
But there was this lady that got a burden for them, and she wanted to carry the gospel to this group of Amazon headhunters. And everybody told her that she was nuts. She went and she found a man who had an aircraft, and she said, "I'm looking for someone to fly me into this group." He said, "It's a suicide mission. No one would ever have you to do that." And so pilot after pilot refused to go. Finally, she came up with this one man. And this one man said, "I will take you. I'll drop you off. I'm not landing. I will drop you off. I'll drop supplies off. I'll come back in a week to check on you. However, you'll be dead. There's no need for me to even come back." And so anyway, all this goes about and he drops her off, just like he said. And a week later, he's coming back in and he's expecting for her to be dead. No sign of her whatsoever. Turn around, take the sad news back to her family. But as he's coming and the plane is making the noises it's approaching, here comes an entire tribe coming out to meet him. And in the front of that tribe is this woman leading the way. And circles around there, waving him to come down. They've had a landing strip made for him. He lands there amongst all of them. And he comes to her and he says, "What in the world happened?" He landed. He didn't get killed. She was still alive. And so she said, "Before I came, the chief had a dream." Okay. There would be this white lady with golden hair, white goddess, I think it was, with golden hair, would descend from the sky and she would bring to you news about God and you need to hear her. And so whenever this blonde goddess fell from the sky, coming and telling about God, the chief was expecting her. He was thrilled to see her and he listened to every word she said. And the entire tribe got saved, believed, because of the chief's dream that he had. Okay? Like I said, I can't go back and validate that or anything. Most likely, probably is true. I can believe that God would work in that way. But here's the thing. Is it going to happen on a regular occurrence? Can you expect for God to give you a dream tonight about your occurrences tomorrow? Probably not. Because in this circumstance, in this situation, God was using special circumstances in order to get his gospel to this group, in order to work his plan amongst a group that was not going to be reached in any other way. Okay, so that's just an instance. Can he do it? Yes. Should we go around and expecting it or searching through our dreams and dreams and trying to find some kind of interpretation for our dreams? You're probably going to get off on a wild goose chase on that one. Okay. And so my point is here that, like I said, it's a rare occasion. He also made animals to speak, and he said that rocks would cry out if we withhold our praise. But I doubt any of us are going out listening to rocks or donkeys. Right? And so just to pull all of it together, the dreams were for a special purpose. Those who had them knew that they had a specific significance. They knew that there was some kind of a significance to the dream whenever they had them. The baker and the butler, they dreamed regularly. But this one night, they woke up, they were troubled by their dreams, and they knew there was something to it. Pharaoh the same way, Joseph the same way. And so, not only did they know that there was a special significance, God also provided someone to interpret it along the same lines as what a prophet would.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? And so this was someone who could interpret this dream for them.
Yeah.
And so, let me leave it with this. If God ever gave you a dream with a special meaning, he would put together circumstances so that you could find out what the meaning was. Because every time you find it in Scripture, he makes the meaning clear.
Right.
We don't find that people are left just wondering.
Right.
He puts everything in place to get the dream interpreted.
Yeah.
So don't be going and driving yourself crazy trying to figure out what your dreams mean. God primarily guides us and grows us through circumstances, through his word, and through his spirit.
Yeah.
It's the way he works in our lives today. Like I said, could he do it that way? Yeah, he could. Will he? Probably not. As we consider Pharaoh's dreams, though, they were pretty simple. Two instances of prime specimens that were consumed by some of the worst, leaving them none bettered at the end.
Mm-hmm.
And we find that as the next time that he tells the story here, that after the skinny cows eat the fat cows, the skinny cows are still skinny.
Right.
After the bad corn eats the good corn, it's still bad corn at the end.
Right.
It doesn't get a bit healthier.
Right.
And so, as I said before, these would be crazy dreams, and Pharaoh wanted to know what they meant. And no one was able to tell him until at just the right moment, the butler remembered Joseph. Right?
Yeah.
had the butler came to Pharaoh sooner and told about Joseph before Pharaoh had the dream, would all these events have lined up? If it would have happened the way Joseph wanted it to, 2 years prior, as soon as the butler got out of jail, he goes to Pharaoh and says, "Hey, I met this guy. You need to hear his story. Bring him out of jail."
Yeah.
What about 2 years later, whenever the dream needed interpreted? Would it still fall into place? Probably not. Yeah, would he have even still been there? He would have got turned loose and probably would have went back to his family, right? Or somewhere else. Because he was no longer a slave, no longer a prisoner whenever he was set free. And so it was just at the right moment that the butler remembered Joseph. So we give the butler a hard time for forgetting him, but God was orchestrating it together for his purposes. Everything could have turned out much different had he remembered him sooner. And so as we come down to verse number 14, it says, "Then Pharaoh sent and called Joseph, and they brought him hastily out of the dungeon, and he shaved himself and changed his raiment and came unto Pharaoh. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I have dreamed a dream, and there is none that can interpret it. And I have heard say of thee that thou canst understand a dream to interpret it. And Joseph answered Pharaoh, saying, It is not in me. God shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace." And so Joseph's quickly brought before Pharaoh. We find here that he is shaved. By the way, the Jews didn't shave. They had beards. The Egyptians shaved. And so he's already changing his appearance. He's going, starting fresh, starting a new identity here. And that'll be important here in a minute. But anyway, just as quickly as he was sold off into Egypt, he woke up that morning. Everything was fine. He was in the father's house. And by that evening, he was in a caravan headed toward Egypt as a slave. Just as quickly, he woke up in the prison house. And by that evening, he ended up in the palace. It's amazing how quickly things can change. But he never knew how much his life was getting ready to change. You also notice that all through this, even beyond where I read down to, that Joseph is constantly giving God the glory. It would have been easy for him, and it would have been tempting for him to elevate himself.
Right.
It's been said, Joseph, that you can interpret dreams. Why, yes, yes, I can. Right? He could have taken the credit. But all along he was elevating God. But also, there would have been an element of fear here. Because if you know anything about Egypt and about the pharaohs were regarded as a god. And they were one of their main gods during that time. And they received worship at that time. And for Joseph to come before Pharaoh and say, "Pharaoh, you don't have the answers, even though you consider yourself to be God. And I don't have the answers, but I have a God that's more powerful than you, Pharaoh. And he has the answers." You see where there'd be a little bit of a risk there?
Yeah.
Saying, "Oh, Pharaoh, you claim to be a god. My God's more powerful than you are."
Yeah.
And so anyway, both pride and fear would tempt him to forget God.
Right.
Even bitterness, because, hey, God's forgot me all this time. But anyway, all along he gave God the glory. And said, "It's not of me, it's nothing that I can do. It is God that shall give Pharaoh an answer of peace," there in verse 16. And so as we go down to verse 17 and continue here, it says, "And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, In my dream I stood upon the banks of the river." So not a whole lot of chit-chat going on. Pharaoh's wanting his answer, right?
Yeah.
"And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, In my dream, behold, I stood upon the bank of the river. And behold, there came up out of the river seven kine, fat-fleshed and well-favored, and they fed in a meadow. And behold, seven other kine came up after them, poor and very ill-favored and lean-fleshed." Now we get some more details on them. "Such as I never saw in all the land of Egypt for badness." He's describing them. He's had a little bit of a chance to think on them. And he said, "Oh, those were some pretty poor cows. I've never seen them in all of Egypt that was so poor as these cows. And the lean and the ill-favored kind did eat up the first seven fat kind. And when they had eaten them up, it could not be known that they had eaten them, but they were still ill-favored as at the beginning. So I awoke." So verse 21 is all new information. I'd mentioned it earlier, but he didn't say it the first time the dream was told, right? In In verse number 22, it says, "And I saw in my dream, and behold, seven ears came up in one stalk, full and good. And behold, seven ears withered thin and blasted with the east wind, sprung up after them. And the thin ears devoured the seven good ears. And I told this unto the magicians, but there was none that could declare it to me." So these are my dreams, Joseph. And I've told them to the magicians already, put the pressure on him, right?
Yeah.
Joseph's already talked about God.
Right.
By the way, that shows his faith.
Mm-hmm.
You notice there in verse number 16, God shall give Pharaoh. He had faith in God, didn't he?
Yeah.
That's a little bit bold, because if I was going there, I'd say, I hope God can answer you. I hope it'll work out. We'll give it a shot.
Yeah.
But Joseph said, God will answer you. And so now Pharaoh turns around and he says, my magicians haven't been able to do it. I have no answer for it. So how about you and your God?
Yeah.
He's putting him to the test, is he not?
Right.
And so anyway, I find it significant as well with the magicians. I said that Pharaoh would have known that this was specifically an important dream. But he did have magicians and soothsayers and all of his wise men around him. That whenever he'd have a dream, he could go to them and say, I dreamed this dream, and they'd come up with something.
Right.
And they'd tell him, oh, I think you dreamed this dream, and it means that your mom didn't hug you enough when you were a kid. You know, some of these things, you know, interpreting his dream for him. But he said even none of them could come up with this. This was too weird. They couldn't even make something up.
Yeah.
You know, a lot of your dreams, you know, you could tell me a dream, and I could come up with something.
Yeah.
But you tell me this dream, I'm like, I got nothing.
Yeah.
Cows eating cows, corn eating corn, nah. I have no idea. Lay off the heavy food before you go to bed. And so anyways, we continue here on this passage. Verse 24 at the end says, none could declare it unto me. In verse 25, and Joseph said unto Pharaoh, the dream of Pharaoh is one. God hath showed Pharaoh what he is about to do. Still giving God the honor, the praise, and the glory, saying, Pharaoh, this dream comes from God. By the way, the God of all heaven and earth, Pharaoh being a pagan king,
yeah.
God is still working, still sovereign even over that pagan king.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't matter what kind of wickedness we have down in the dale, whatever it is, whatever it's called down there. Doesn't matter.
Yeah.
Doesn't matter who the Taoiseach is. Doesn't matter who the president is. Doesn't matter any of those things. God still has a hand in all of that.
Mm-hmm.
He's still in control in all of that. And so he says, God has showed Pharaoh what he is about to do, whether you like it or not, Pharaoh. You have no control over this. God's getting ready to do this.
Yeah.
The seven good kind are 7 years. Now, Pharaoh never thought of that. Cows, years, doesn't make sense. Anyway, the seven good kind are 7 years, and the seven good ears are 7 years. The dream is one. And the seven thin and ill-favored kind that came up after them are 7 years, and the seven empty ears blasted with the east wind shall be 7 years of famine. Now, as a ruler, as a king, as a pharaoh, or whatever he is, he does not want to hear this word famine. This is the thing which I have spoken unto Pharaoh. What God is about to do, he showeth unto Pharaoh. Doesn't say, I'm going to show you, Pharaoh. It says, God's showing you. Behold, there come 7 years of great plenty throughout all the land of Egypt, and there shall arise after them 7 years of famine, and all the plenty shall be forgotten in the land of Egypt, and the famine shall consume the land, and the plenty shall not be known in the land by reason of the famine following, for it shall be very grievous. And the dream that, that the dream was doubled unto Pharaoh twice, it is because the thing is established by God, and God will shortly bring it to pass. So all through this, he said, this is what God's doing. This is what God's showing. This is what God's revealing. This is what God has done in this situation, what God's going to do. So he's giving God the glory all throughout it.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, it's been doubled to you because it's going to happen shortly. Now, there is a great risk if he had not known this ahead of time. They have 7 years of plenty. And it's time to party, right? They're going to enjoy it. They're going to just go crazy with all of the wealth and all the prosperity they have, expecting it to go on forever. You ever see someone who came into unexpected money? They win the lottery, or they they get some kind of a grant, they get something that comes in unexpectedly, and it's going like that. And then they wreck their car. And they have no money to pay for the car, even though a year prior they had more than enough, right? This is what would have happened in Egypt. They would have went through all of their excess supplies. And then whenever the 7 years of famine hit, they would have been starving. They would have been in want. And so the dream, it says here that at the end, you would have never even known that they had the 7 years of plenty after the famine because it was so severe. So could you imagine the 7 years of absolute excess where there was everything was bringing forth in handfuls, and just simply 7 years later, that's all forgotten about. Those were the good old days, telling stories to the grandkids. You remember that 1 year? But anyway, all of it would have been gone. And so as Joseph is telling him this, he now has to figure out what to do. It's going to be a big problem. He's got an explanation. After we find out Joseph's explanation, it seems fairly easy, fairly simple, fairly clear, right? 7 years plenty, 7 years of famine. Famine eats up. It's a simple dream after he gives you the key for it, right?
Yeah.
And so Pharaoh had this big problem on his hands. It would be great to know ahead, but what could he do with this information that you've just been given him? And so we find that Joseph doesn't stop there. He was just supposed to interpret the dream, right?
Right.
He's been in prison for a while. He's got a lot to say. So anyway, verse number 33 says, "Now therefore, let Pharaoh look out a man discreet and wise and set him over the land of Egypt, and let Pharaoh do this, and let him appoint officers over the land and take up the fifth part of the land of Egypt in the seven plenteous years, and let them gather all of the food of those good years that come and lay up corn under the hand of Pharaoh, and let them keep food in the cities. And that food shall be for store to the land against the 7 years of famine, which shall be in the land of Egypt, that the land perish not through the famine." And the thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. God has spent several years preparing Joseph for this very time.
Right.
Think about it for just a minute. God has been preparing him, giving him both wisdom and experience.
Yes.
As he's sitting in Potiphar's house, over all of the things that Potiphar has, running a household, figuring out how to pay the bills, how to work budgets, how to control the servants or lead and send out the servants and those kind of things. All of this is giving him managerial experiences, right? And then he gets thrown into prison, and guess what? He's over the entire prison, and he's managing prisoners. Maybe he's managing even the food that comes in, the things that go out, overseeing all the things that are done in the prison. And so whenever he stands before Pharaoh, he's saying, if you're going to have these 7 years where there's absolute, a ridiculous amount of plenty, it's about time to institute a tax. Now we like Joseph a little bit less when we find out that he's instituting taxes, right? But he says, take up 20% of all the things through the 7 years of plenty. Because they're going to have so much during those 7 years, they're not going to miss it. Could you imagine 20%? 20% during the 7 years of plenty was enough to get them through the 7 years of famine and sell the excess. So imagine how much there was during the 7 years of plenty. They saved one part, used four parts, and that one part they saved was enough to get them through 7 years plus. It's pretty crazy, right? Now, you got to figure that some of them would have been a little bit smarter, and maybe they would have saved another part out of their four parts, right?
Yeah.
And would have went part of the way through the 7 years of famine. But this is what's going on. And so he said, just save out this 20%. Collect it off all of your people during these 7 years of plenty. They're not even going to miss it. They're going to get plenty. And then after that, you'll have food. He says, even lay it up in the cities. Don't come and hoard it all up in the capital city, but keep it in all the cities and store places in the cities. And then, as you store all of that around, it's going to be local for the people who are needing it.
Right.
He was a shrewd businessman, wasn't he?
Mm-hmm.
He was a good manager.
Yeah.
Where did that come from? God had granted him the wisdom that he needed and the experience that he needed for the task that he had ahead.
Right.
This is something reassuring to us, because there's been many times in my life I felt that I was in completely over my head. Okay? But if we're following God, God will prepare us ahead of time. He will give us the wisdom and the skills that we need to do the job that he has for us, just like he did Joseph. And so whenever Joseph was standing before Pharaoh that day, he knew exactly what to do because of what God had put him through, right? How dare you put me through this, God? God says, chill out just a minute. I've got a purpose behind this. You're going to need this before too long. And so he knew exactly what to do in that moment. We may never know what God has allowed in our lives to prepare us for what lies further down the road. But God knows how to train us and how to prepare us. So many of those situations that we get mad at God about, or we get discouraged about, or we wish never would have happened, God's saying, yeah, I'll take your little bit of abuse and your pouty lip and all of your complaints and all those kind of things, because you're going to be glad to have this experience. Just a couple of years, you're going to need this.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
So verse number 37, we'll pick up there where we left off. The thing was good in the eyes of Pharaoh and in the eyes of all his servants. And Pharaoh said unto his servants, can we find such a one as this is, a man in whom the Spirit of God is? Now Pharaoh's picking up on this.
Mm-hmm.
Joseph's been talking about God so much, now Pharaoh is.
Yeah.
He says he's got the Spirit of God in him. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God hath showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and as wise as thou art. He says, if I've got somebody working for me that's overseeing this task, I want them to be someone who has your God in them.
Yeah.
Now, Pharaoh didn't worship this God, but he worshiped many gods.
Right.
And he says, apparently, you're serving a good God.
Mm-hmm.
You're serving a powerful God. And your God knows what he's doing. And so, if you're going to serve him and he's going to continue blessing you like he has, I want you working for me.
Yeah.
Now, let's just think for just a moment on this while I was going on. Who all would have been in this group that would have been hearing all of this? There would have been many leaders, many foreign dignitaries maybe. There was rulers over all of the house of Egypt that would have been there. More than likely, there was Potiphar there. You ever think about that?
No.
Potiphar, the one who put him in jail because his wife falsely accused him. Potiphar was one of his captains. It was one of his officers under Pharaoh. And so if something big was going on in Pharaoh's house, more than likely, this captain would have been there. I might be reading too much into it, and if I am, then, oh well. I'll have fun with it while I can. But I can just imagine Potiphar whenever he sees Joseph coming out of prison, knowing he's the one that put him there. Without due process, without finding out, did this guy really do what my wife said that he did? And now he's standing before Pharaoh. He tells the dream and says, yeah, he always was pretty good. And now, as Pharaoh's saying, I can't find anyone so wise and discreet as what you are, I think I'll just give you that position that you just created.
Mm-hmm.
And about that time, Potiphar's knees are knocking, saying, nah, he's getting a very important position. He's going to be over me. And I'm the one that put him in jail by false accusations. By this time, maybe Potiphar even found out that his wife had cheated on him multiple times and found out she couldn't be trusted, and he's really afraid. I don't know. I might be reading too much into it. Maybe he's still with his wife and he goes home and says, honey, you're not going to believe what happened today. You remember that guy that you were accusing and we put him in jail? Yeah, he's now prime minister of the country. Whoopsie. Good thing he's not vindictive, right? And so verse 39, it says, and Pharaoh said unto Joseph, for as much as God has showed thee these things, has showed thee all this, there is none so discreet and wise as thou art. Thou shalt be over my house. According unto thy word shall all my people be ruled. Only in the throne will I be greater than thou. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, see, I have set thee over all the land of Egypt. Y'all catch what just happened? This was a prisoner. He just got out of the prison that morning. And now he's standing before Pharaoh, and Pharaoh says, only in my throne will I be more powerful than you. You're over my entire kingdom, my entire empire. You are the one who's now in charge, and whatever you say goes in my kingdom. Only in my throne am I more powerful than you. That's a big promotion, isn't it? Verse 42, and Pharaoh took off his ring from his hand and put it on Joseph's hand, and arrayed him in vestures of linen, and put a gold chain about his neck. Remember, as we've been reading through this, there's a couple times that he's been stripped of his clothing, isn't there?
Yes.
He lost his coat of many colors. He lost his outer garment whenever he ran from Pharaoh or from Potiphar's wife. And so now he's arrayed in the finest clothing that can be found in Egypt. Arrayed him in vestures of fine linen, put a gold chain about his neck instead of brass irons or iron chains around his wrist. Now he's got gold chains around his neck. Verse 43, and he made him to ride in the second chariot, which he had, and they cried before him, bow the knee, and he made him ruler over all the land of Egypt. And Pharaoh said unto Joseph, I am Pharaoh, and without thee shall no man lift up his hand or foot in all the land of Egypt. So Pharaoh, in his position as being considered a god, is decreeing this, saying that no man is going to move a foot or a hand without your approval in Egypt. That's how much control he's giving him here. And Pharaoh didn't even know that this guy existed the day before.
Yeah.
That's amazing, isn't it?
Yeah.
And all of the things that we've read about up until this point in time is culminated in this point.
Yeah.
None of it would have happened had all of the bad things happened in between. God was bringing all these things together. Remember we said that Joseph was the ultimate illustration of Romans 8:28?
Yes.
And we know that all things work together for good to them who love God, to them who are the called according to his purpose.
Yeah.
All things work together for good, but not all things were good.
Right.
And God worked them together. We sometimes just don't stick in there long enough to see what God's working out. Sometimes we quit too early. And so basically, Joseph's put in as being the prime minister of all of Egypt. He would have been the Taoiseach of all Egypt. That doesn't make it sound as great, does it? And so he's no longer stripped of his coat, but he's arrayed in the finest. He's no longer tied to the back of the merchant's wagon. He's riding in a golden chariot, second in line to Pharaoh. No longer in prison, but he was living in a palace. And all that changed in one day. So we go down to verse number 45. And it says, and Pharaoh called Joseph's name Zaphnath-Paneah. Personally, I like Joseph.
Yeah,
I think I would stick with that one. But anyway, he gives him an Egyptian name there. And the name there means revealer of secret things. Mm-hmm. And so he's getting a new identity, a new name. And he gave him to wife Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On. And Joseph went out over all the land of Egypt, and Joseph was 30 years old when he stood before Pharaoh, king of Egypt. And Joseph went out from the presence of Pharaoh, and he went throughout all the land of Egypt, and in the seven plenteous years the earth brought forth by handfuls. And he gathered up all the food of the 7 years which were in the land of Egypt, and laid up the food in the cities, the food of the fields, which was round about every city, laid he up in the same. And Joseph gathered corn as the sand of the sea, very much, until he left numbering, for it was without number. So 20% was so much that it was without number, he gave up on counting it all.
Mm-hmm.
And unto Joseph were born two sons before the years of famine came, which Asenath, the daughter of Potiphar, priest of On, bare unto him. And Joseph called the name of the firstborn Manasseh, for God said, he hath made me to forget my toil and all my father's house. And the name of the second called he Ephraim, for God hath caused me to be fruitful in the land of my afflictions. And the 7 years of plenteousness that was in the land of Egypt were ended. And so now we find that Joseph is given a bride. He's there working for Pharaoh. He's leading the whole land. And Pharaoh gives him a bride, gives him a new name, and also God gives him two children.
Mm-hmm.
And as he was seeing all of these things happen, it was just like everything was just as plentiful in his life as what the crops were bringing forth plentiful, right?
Right.
Now, being a slight pessimist at times, if I was Joseph, I'd be saying, okay, when does it all blow up?
That's what I was just thinking.
Right? Because he was rising up in Potiphar's house, then he's in prison. right?
Yeah.
He was doing good in his father's house, and then he was a slave. Yeah. Seems like every time things are going good, something happens to it. And he's like, okay, what's going to go wrong now?
Yeah.
Things are getting too good, God, what's going to happen? Of course, we know nothing happens. Nothing bad, at least. And so he's probably just waiting for the next disaster. But now I want to look, because I've said several times before that Joseph is the most complete type of Christ in the Old Testament. If you look at Joseph, he is a picture of Christ in the Old Testament. We can see parallels between Christ and Joseph, okay? And so now I want to point out just a couple more reasons why. I've pointed out several as we've went along. But we already know that he was beloved of the Father. He was hated and sold by his brothers for the price of a slave. He was falsely accused and unjustly punished. And now we see him rising again and sitting at the right hand of the king. And he's given a Gentile bride, taken out of idolatry and paganism. This Asenath was the daughter of the priest, okay? The priest of On. On was the center, the hub of sun worship. And so her father would have been the priest to the sun god. She would have been his daughter. She would have been raised up in worship of the sun god. And now he gets a Gentile bride that comes from idolatry and paganism. And he receives two sons. And if you look at the name, Ephraim and Manasseh, the firstborn's Manasseh. And his name means forgetful. Means to forget. See what it says here. For God said, for God said he, hath made me forget all my toil and all my father's house. He made me to forget. So, Manasseh means forget, and Ephraim means fruitful. So he has a Gentile bride. The children from that is forgetfulness and fruitful.
Mm-hmm.
Now we can, this is just thinking out loud, okay? We can parallel that with the church today because they're kind of divided between those who are forgetful and those who are fruitful. Right? But also, whenever we become Christians, whenever we become part of his bride, he forgets the things that are behind us and he makes us fruitful.
Right.
So take that whichever way you want to. Yeah, she says she likes the last one. But either way, it's a picture of Christianity. And then as we continue onward next week, we're going to see that the tribulation, which begins after the 7 years of plenty, we get 7 years of famine. 7 years of pestilence, 7 years of tribulation. And what ends up happening is that 7 years of tribulation brings his brethren back to bow down before him.
Mm-hmm.
And we see this in future events. We see this in prophecy that one day during the time of the great tribulation, God is going to use that to turn the Israelites back to God.
Right.
That tribulation is going to bring them to Christ to worship him as Messiah. Okay? And so we can see all these parallels between Joseph and Christ. And by the way, there are several others that I haven't brought out. But we'll finish up here in verse number 53 through 57. You already read 53. But this gives us a little bit of a segue into next week. It says, and the 7 years of plenteousness that was in the land of Egypt were ended, and the 7 years of dearth began to come, according as Joseph had said, and the dearth was in all lands, but in the land of Egypt there was bread. And when all the land of Egypt was famished, the people cried unto Pharaoh for bread, and Pharaoh said unto the Egyptians, go unto Joseph, what he saith unto you, do. And the famine was over all the face of the earth, and Joseph opened all the storehouses, and sold unto the Egyptians. And the famine waxed sore in the land of Egypt, and all countries came into Egypt to Joseph to buy corn, because that the famine was so sore in all lands. And so, as I said, that sets the stage for next week, whenever, even up in Canaan, in the land that God gave to Abraham, Isaac, and Joseph, there was famine up there as well. And you remember what was going on up there in Canaan land was that the children of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob were intermarrying with the Canaanites. They were starting to intermix with the Canaanites, and they were losing their separation. They were losing their distinctiveness. And so God is going to bring them down to the Egyptians to a land where they can't mix with. And we find that over the entire book of Exodus. They live in Egypt, but they never mix with the Egyptians for several different reasons. We'll look at those next week. But anyway, so Joseph's brothers are going to be coming down to buy food off of Joseph. And guess what the first thing they do whenever they come before Joseph is? Bow down. The one thing they said never would happen. By the way, the Jews in Christ's time said we'll never bow down to him. We have no king but Caesar, right? But one day, every knee will bow. Every tongue will confess. And so we'll see that, Lord willing, next week. Does anyone have any comments or questions or criticisms? I'll take anything.
I don't know if this will come out right, but one thing that really kind of stood out to me was when he said he came out of prison and he shaved his head and changed his clothes and different things. But can you imagine all of us here have moved country in the culture shock?
Mm-hmm.
Can you imagine going from having it all to being a slave, the shock, not even going into the part of it was in another country where he knew nobody.
Mm-hmm.
And then for God to bring him to where he was in the house, and then the shock again of being at the bottom.
Mm-hmm.
And just having to mentally adjust to all of this so many different times.
Right. And so a lot of times we read through all of that, we don't realize the severity of it all.
Yeah, how it plays with you, even mentally.
I mean, even just the things that we've been through in the past 6 months with all of this, with isolation, quarantine, and everything else, it's been a shock to everyone's system, and we've had trouble. Some of us have trouble coping with it. I don't know about everyone. But could you imagine all the things Joseph went through?
Mm-hmm.
All the changes that happened in his life. And yet he remained faithful.
There's a question, but again, I'll check in verse 38. And it's like Pharaoh realized this God
mm-hmm.
within Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
And he mentioned there's one child that pick it up, say, there's a spirit of God in this person.
Mm-hmm.
That's the word of Pharaoh.
What is it?
That was the word of Pharaoh.
Yes.
There's a spirit of God in
mm-hmm.
verse 38. I'm just summarizing.
Mm-hmm.
In this person. I'm trying to understand what God was Pharaoh talking about in that verse.
Well, honestly,
you can see the spirit.
Mm-hmm.
of God in Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
And we learn that Pharaoh was God himself, as
mm-hmm.
he put today.
Right.
But he's starting to realize this God in this person. So which God was referring to himself being God?
Well, with that,
small one, but not that much.
Capitalized, the God, the Spirit of God is capitalized in here.
Right. But it doesn't necessarily mean that Pharaoh would have wrote it out capitalized.
I know that, but
the reason why I'm saying that is that with Pharaoh, he would have accepted many gods.
Right.
Okay.
They had Ra, they had Horus, they had Isis, they had Osiris, they had Thoth, they had I don't know how many different gods that they had. And not only that, they had a lot to do with spiritism and reincarnation and the nether world and the, you know, all these different things. And so the idea that Pharaoh mentioned a spirit of God, to him, you know, we look at it being monotheistic, thinking there's one God.
Yes.
Right.
And for him to say the spirit of God, we're thinking, okay, it's almost a profession of faith on his behalf.
Mm-hmm.
But in reality, he's like, spirit of that God, spirit of that God, spirit of that. It's just a spirit of a God. And this happens to be one maybe he didn't know very well. Or maybe he was familiar with the Hebrews God.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he was familiar with the God that they serve. Just, I'm not sure exactly which name for God that they use there. Elohim, probably.
Mm-hmm.
But he had heard of this. And so, anyway, he would have just said, okay, add it to the plethora of other gods. And apparently this one's got to be more wise than all the rest of them because my magicians and astrologers and soothsayers and everybody else couldn't give me an answer. Mm-hmm. But you could.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so it wasn't necessarily that he's pointing out the God.
Okay.
But just another God. And so he's accepting that apparently Joseph is inhabited by the spirit of a great God, just as Pharaoh thinks that he's inhabited by the spirit of Ra, the sun god.
Yeah.
So they're just kind of looking at it as, okay, which god's taking over you, controlling you? Because this one's inhabiting Pharaoh.
Yeah.
You've got a god inhabiting you, so you're a wise guy. We'll go ahead and we'll put you in there.
But
you
can see the difference in him.
And so, yeah, he did. He could. He could see a difference in him. And he says, whatever god it is, it's got a control of you, is a good one. We want to have you in here on our court. And so I don't think it was necessarily him saying, the God of heaven and earth, the creator of all the universe, the one who made me, and he's a, it was to Pharaoh just another God.
Okay. That's another one.
Yeah. Because really you can go to a lot of religions
yeah.
that believe in many gods.
Yes.
You go to some of the maybe even some of the tribal religions and you tell them about Jesus.
Yeah.
They'll just add him into the rest of their religion. They'll say, yeah, we'll worship Jesus too. Even with the Catholics, they have a prayer for everything. And this is one reason why, like all the gospel tracts and stuff we have here, I don't have any of them that say pray this prayer. Because guess what? Just another prayer to add to the stack. We'll pray this one too. We'll add it to the rosary and to the Our Father and all everything else. And so you go to a lot of these other religions, it's like, okay, we worship all these gods, we'll worship yours too. And they just roll them in together. And that's kind of what Pharaoh was doing here, I believe. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it did. It's just I'm still in question because I believe Pharaoh, he has this trope of God of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
He might have heard of it mm-hmm. before,
right?
And for him, continuously calling God, even though there was
mm-hmm.
gods in Egypt with the mm-hmm. worship at that time, but again mentioned in this verse, he said the spirit, there's difference between, okay, God of this Norway God they were worshiping,
mm-hmm.
which I don't believe
mm-hmm.
there was so high the spirit God that he was mentioning. Mm-hmm. So I'm trying to figure out maybe he have some sort of belief on what this guy was saying.
Mm-hmm.
And after that, all these things that he told him happened.
Mm-hmm.
Is any way that he can, even though he have that heavy heart in him to believe other God besides mm-hmm. what he believed, mm-hmm. but he can still stick it. There might be some God which
right.
is greater than the one we have mm-hmm. here, or than me as I'm
right.
calling myself. God is just.
Well, hopefully, with all of it, there was a seed planted there at least, because Pharaoh's looking at this and saying, there's something more to this.
Yeah.
Right.
Because all of the gods that I'm aware of can't do this sort of thing.
Yeah, this, yeah.
And then as he's observing Joseph from day to day and the way that things happen, and as the 7 years of plenty go
yes.
by and the 7 years of famine, more than likely he's looking at Joseph
mm.
and looking at Joseph's God. And hopefully through all that, and with all the time he spent with Joseph, hopefully he came to the place in believing in Joseph's God.
Yeah.
But we have no way of knowing.
We'll
find out one of these days. But we have no way of knowing how extensive this went.
Yeah.
But the only thing that I can look at is there are many of these pantheistic religions that's more than happy to welcome a new God.
Yeah.
Even if you look at the Apostle Paul as he was going to Mars Hill, and as he's looking at all the different altars and all the different idols that are there, and it says that he sees the inscription to the unknown God.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, him I declare unto you. And he starts preaching God.
Right.
The God.
Right.
And he says, you're worshiping all of these little g gods. You're worshiping all these made up gods. Let me tell you about the true God who made everything. And he preaches that to them.
Yeah.
Now here's where it comes into problem with Paul. Paul says he's the only God.
Mm-hmm.
This is where we come into problems with the world. The world's more than happy to accept another God.
Yeah.
they're not willing to accept only one God.
Right.
And so, you know, they've got all their little bumper stickers, coexist, everybody get along, and we'll have the Muslims and the Jews and the Christians and the Hindus and the all these different guys, everyone will get together and we'll all just get along and everything will be wonderful. Okay? But whenever the Christian comes out and says, there's only one God, they have a problem with that. You're too narrow-minded, right? And so at this point in time, Pharaoh would be more than happy to accept another God. Maybe even that he's more powerful than any of them he's known before. He might pull Joseph off to the side and say, tell me about this God you serve, because I've never seen anything like this. And Joseph starts explaining to him, and he says, you mean that Ra and Horus and Isis and Osiris and all these other guys aren't really gods? Okay, I'm no longer interested in your God because these are my gods. Or it could have went the other way around. We could be more optimistic. Sorry, I'm a pessimist.
Yeah.
Maybe I'm not a pessimist. Maybe I'm a realist.
Yeah.
One or the other. So that gives us something to kind of meditate on and try to think through. Okay. Well, let's go ahead and we'll go to the Lord in prayer and not keep you all hostage tonight. Dear Lord, we come to you today. Thank you for your blessings, and we thank you for all that you've done for us, and we thank you for this time in your house, and Lord, for this time in your word, and I pray, Lord, that it's been beneficial and fruitful for us, Lord, and Lord, I just pray that you'd help us to meditate on this as we leave this place, Lord, and help that the devil and distractions don't rip this from our minds, Lord, but help us to continue just thinking on this thought, Lord, of how we need to be faithful and consistent and just trust you no matter what's going on around us, Lord, but staying with you and allowing you to work your perfect plan out in our lives. And Lord, I just pray you be with each person here, do exactly what's needed in their hearts and lives this week. Help them to be a witness wherever they go. And Lord, be with those who aren't able to be with us here tonight, Lord, for whatever reason, traveling, work, and different things. Lord, I just pray you bless them and watch over them as well. We thank you so much for all you do for us. And all these things we pray in Jesus' name. Amen.